What happens when the innocent are destroyed by those they trust? In 1815, a young sailor named Edmond Dantes stood on the precipice of everything a man could want: love, career, family, only to watch it vanish in a single afternoon. His crime? Being too successful, too happy, too loved. Three jealous men conspired to destroy him with a single anonymous letter, and a corrupt prosecutor buried the truth to protect his own ambitions. Dantes would spend 14 years in a fortress prison, transforming from an optimistic youth into something far more dangerous, a man with unlimited wealth, refined intellect, and an unquenchable thirst for vengeance. This is the story that has captivated readers for 175 years, not because we celebrate revenge, but because we recognize the terrible beauty in its execution and the devastating price it exacts from everyone it touches. Dantes returns to Marseille in February 1815 with a promotion to captain and plans to marry Mercedes. He's honest, capable, genuinely kind, but three men cannot stomach his success. Danglars covets the promotion. Fernand Mondego desires Mercedes. Even neighbor Caderousse harbors enough envy to become complicit. Their weapon? An anonymous letter branding Dantes a Bonapartist agent, referencing his innocent delivery of a dying captain's message at Elba, where Napoleon lives in exile. On his wedding day, police arrive. Dantes laughs. Surely this misunderstanding will clear within hours. But prosecutor Villefort discovers the letter was addressed to his own father, a known Bonaparte supporter. To protect his career, Villefort burns the evidence and condemns an innocent man to indefinite imprisonment in the Chateau d'If. Dantes, now number 34, disappears into darkness. Years blur in the Chateau d'If as Dantes loses track of time and contemplates suicide. Then salvation arrives, an elderly prisoner tunneling into his cell. Abbé Faria, a learned Italian priest, has miscalculated his escape route. This mistake becomes providential. Over several years, Faria transforms Dantes' cell into a university, teaching him mathematics, philosophy, languages, economics, history, and combat skills. Through careful questioning, Faria helps Dantes understand the conspiracy that imprisoned him, piecing together the roles of Danglars, Fernand, and Villefort. Knowledge plants seeds of vengeance. Faria also reveals a vast treasure hidden on Monte Cristo Island. When Faria dies after his third cataleptic seizure, Dantes switches places with the corpse in its burial sack. Guards throw what they believe is Faria's body into the sea with a cannonball attached. Dantes cuts himself free and swims to freedom after 14 years of imprisonment. The man who washes ashore is no longer Edmond Dantes. After joining smugglers and recovering Faria's treasure, he becomes the Count of Monte Cristo. Sophisticated, multilingual, impossibly wealthy, and coldly calculating. He cultivates multiple identities: Lord Wilmore, Abbé Bissoni, Sinbad the Sailor, each serving his grand design. Despite his hardened heart, he still values loyalty. He anonymously saves Morel and Son from bankruptcy, repaying the man who tried to help him years before. But vengeance remains his primary mission. His three enemies have all risen to prominence. Danglars is now a wealthy banker. Fernand, now Count de Morcerf, has married Mercedes and achieved military distinction. And Villefort serves as crown prosecutor. Monte Cristo establishes himself in Paris society, where his enormous wealth and exotic background make him an instant sensation. His revenge will be surgical, designed to make each man destroy himself through his own worst qualities. Monte Cristo's revenge unfolds with chess-like precision. For Fernand, he orchestrates exposure of a treacherous past. How the general betrayed Ali Pasha of Janina to the Turks, selling the Pasha's wife and daughter into slavery. Monte Cristo has rescued the daughter, Heidi, whose testimony in the Chamber of Peers destroys Fernand's reputation. Abandoned by Mercedes and Albert, he commits suicide. Danglars faces financial ruin through calculated manipulation. Monte Cristo gains his confidence, then devastates his bank through massive withdrawals and stock market schemes. When Danglars flees to Italy with his remaining millions, bandits, arranged by the Count, capture him, charging outrageous sums for basic necessities until he's stripped of everything. For Villefort, Monte Cristo crafts the most sophisticated revenge. He befriends Villefort's wife, sharing poison knowledge she uses to murder family members, blocking her son's inheritance. As deaths multiply, Monte Cristo ensures Villefort discovers her crimes. The final blow? A defendant reveals himself as Villefort's illegitimate son, the baby the prosecutor buried alive. Public scandal, his wife's suicide, and mounting horrors drive Villefort insane. Monte Cristo's revenge unleashes devastating consequences he never anticipated. Mercedes loses everything, her husband, her social standing. Villefort's innocent young son dies by his mother's hand. Albert de Morcerf, an honorable gentleman, ignorant of his father's treachery, watches his family name disintegrate. The turning point comes when Albert challenges Monte Cristo to a duel. Mercedes, recognizing Edmund beneath the Count's cold exterior, falls to her knees. "Edmund, you will not kill my son?" This maternal plea pierces his carefully constructed righteousness. "I took the place of God," he reflects, the realization crushing his certainty. This insight transforms him. He spares Albert and begins tempering justice with mercy. He saves Maximilian Morel from suicide after Valentine's apparent death. Rather than destroying Danglars completely, he teaches him the emptiness of wealth before allowing him to leave with means to survive. He ensures Mercedes and Albert's future as they begin their modest new life. Throughout his years of plotting, Monte Cristo believed prison had extinguished his capacity for human connection. Yet Haiti, initially rescued as a weapon against Fernand, gradually cracks the walls around his heart with her unwavering devotion. When she declares, "You are my master, but you are also my friend. For me, you are the whole of humanity," he recognizes the possibility of a future beyond vengeance. The Morel family serves as another catalyst. In Maximilian's passionate love for Valentine, Monte Cristo sees his younger self, what he might have become. When Maximilian falls into suicidal despair after Valentine's apparent death, Monte Cristo intervenes, determined to prevent the young man from succumbing to the same darkness. The novel concludes with Monte Cristo sailing away with Haiti, consciously leaving behind both his vengeance and the identity he created to execute it. His final letter distills his journey's wisdom. "All human wisdom is contained in these two words, wait and hope," a stark contrast to his earlier motto of vengeance. What elevates this tale is its exploration of justice, forgiveness, and moral responsibility. Monte Cristo initially sees himself as Providence's hand, yet confronts unintended consequences: the suffering of innocence, the corruption of his soul, the emptiness of achieved revenge. His 14 years remain lost. Mercedes has grown old, his father died of grief. Even triumph feels hollow. The Count of Monte Cristo reminds us, vengeance, however justified, cannot restore what we've lost. True justice lies in redemption, not destruction, in breaking free from the past's chains. Wait and hope, not for revenge, but for wisdom to know when mercy matters more than justice, and courage to reclaim our humanity.